Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. In the spirit of Thanksgiving, as we get closer and closer, just want to take an extra moment to say thank you to all of you for showing up every single day, 365 days a year, allowing me a platform to be able to talk Green Bay Packers. There's nothing I would rather be doing in this world than exactly this, and just being able to talk every single day about our favorite topic, and that is, of course, the Packers. Thank you for signing up to be members. Thank you for telling your friends, liking, commenting, subscribing, all the things that you do to make this show keep running day in and day out. A huge, massive thank you to all of the people who help run the podcast, all of our podcasters, Tyler, who does all the thumbnails. It all is amazing that this is still a thing, that we have the Pack-A-Day radio show, that there's a YouTube channel, an audio podcast. Like, it's a dream come true, and I cannot thank you all enough for being part of this journey with me. So, thank you, and sincerely thank you. It means the world to me. And in that spirit of Thanksgiving as well, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Ralph Running, Nicholas Brewski. It probably is Brusky, but I'm going to say Brewski anyway. And then Mike Hebring, thank you guys for signing up. Hopefully you're enjoying all the extra content out there. The Aaron Nagler video will be up Thursday morning. Ross Uglum's got some extra content out there. So if you have not checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. Extra members Q&A coming on Wednesday, today as you're listening to this. So still plenty of time to sign up. Also, brand new All-Pro members, Step Keat, Lovin' Football's back, and Dylan Pat Scott as well. Thank you guys so much for being All-Pro members. You'll get your name mentioned at the bottom of the list on our episodes. Usually it's just the ones with me because with guests, it's a little bit awkward and so on and so forth, but you'll be on the Wall of Fame as well. And what more could you possibly want than that? All right, we will get to Paul Breidel in just a moment. Before we get there, I did want to talk about one transaction that took place on Tuesday that wasn't actually a transaction that the Packers made. And that was Jamin Davis, the linebacker, the former first-round pick linebacker that the Packers added to their practice squad a few weeks ago, was signed off of the practice squad by the Minnesota Vikings and onto the Vikings 53-man roster. About 99% of the time, if this were to happen, it would have been a footnote in the episode, right? Jamin Davis, I would have basically said, and also, by the way, Jamin Davis was signed by the Minnesota Vikings and the Packers now have an open practice squad spot. That would have been the routine situation 99 times out of 100. The reason this one is not is because, not sure if you're aware of this, but the Packers have a game in a little over 24 hours as you're listening to this. It's a day away. Right now, on their 53-man roster and their 17-man practice squad that they are given roster spots to, 70 players they can have on the roster, they have a total of 5 linebackers on that 70-man roster. Of those 5, Edgerrin Cooper and Isaiah McDuffie, per the simulated estimated injury reports, would not have practiced on Monday or Tuesday. And their potential to play on Thursday is very much seemingly in doubt, which leaves a grand total of Quay Walker, Eric Wilson, and Tyron Hopper as your only off-ball linebackers that are healthy on the entire roster. That's it. So it's not the most advantageous position to be in, especially when you add on top of that, that Tyron Hopper, he's played, what, one actual snap last game before garbage time and then a handful of snaps in garbage time? And that's the complete extent of his NFL career in regular season games. And he is very inexperienced because he's a rookie and has not had the opportunity to get on the field. He's your third linebacker. You are an injury away to Wilson or Quay to only having 2 linebackers and Tyron Hopper playing every single snap. Now, as far as picking somebody up, again, it's Wednesday. They're 24 hours away. Are you going to pick up somebody, put them on the roster, activate them, and try to get them ready in the playbook in about 24 hours? That is an ask of that player. I mean, it's not the most unfathomable thing that's ever happened in the NFL, but it's not an ideal situation, that's for sure. And about the only player that could potentially make some sense is Chris Russell, the linebacker that they released when they picked up Jamin Davis from the practice squad. And he's not been on the roster for a few weeks. He's still out there. At least he knows the system. At least he knows the playbook. At least he kind of is familiar with everyone, right? That's probably what I would do, is bring him back on the practice squad and call him up for the game. So at least you have a fourth linebacker that knows the system. But outside of that, you're in a tough spot. And the only other thing that you sort of have is Kitano Adapo, who many people have sort of predicted may become a linebacker at some point and make that transition from safety to linebacker. He's buried at safety, right? He's currently the number five, even behind Zane Anderson. And Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, and Xavier McKinney are going nowhere for the foreseeable future. So he's buried at that position. So could they move him to linebacker on short notice, at least in an emergency situation? Probably, right? Aaron Mosby is the other one. Aaron Mosby, if you remember, in his NFL career, and even before that, has done off-ball linebacker work. And he was sort of a tweener between off-ball linebacker and defensive end. Now, he has changed his body type to be a defensive end. He does not have the same sort of body structure that he did when he was trying to play off-ball linebacker. He's a different dude now. But at least he does have some experience where if you needed like a strong side linebacker to go in there, at least somebody, right, in a 4-3, if somebody went down, Mosby could at least probably, you know, pull it off to some extent. And if you needed a nickel guy, you could probably go Kitano Adapo. Or again, they could maybe pick up a Chris Russell. But either way, this is far less than ideal. And again, is this probably going to be what we talk about on Friday of like, well, if the Packers would have only had one more linebacker on the roster, they clearly would have won this game? Probably not, right? It probably doesn't end up being much about anything in this case, but it is a weird situation. And I'll add on top of that, the Packers have four wide receivers on their practice squad. They have six really good wide receivers on the active roster that even Malik Heath and Bo Melton are struggling to get playing time as it is. They have four practice squad wide receivers, Cornelius Johnson, Malik Knowles, Julian Hicks, and they just used their most recent practice squad spot on Alex Magoo, an almost 30-year-old player who is trying to transition from quarterback to wide receiver as their final practice squad spot. To put him in that is a weird decision rather than going with maybe a little bit more depth at a position that is a little bit needy due to some of the injuries. So obviously they didn't know the McDuffie one at the time of signing Magoo, but the linebacker, and they didn't know that Jamin Davis was going to get signed. I get hindsight's 20/20, but it does seem like a little bit of a precarious position to be in on a short week and a little bit of an oversight by Brian Gutekunst. My guess is it's much ado about nothing, and we probably don't ever need to bring this up again. And I'm not certainly going to go all in on Goody for what is probably, again, it doesn't really matter all that much, but it is still an interesting situation. And Green Bay does find themselves very, very slim at linebacker at the moment. Injury report, speaking of which, Jaire Alexander, Isaiah McDuffie, Edgerrin Cooper, Romeo Doubs, and John Fitzpatrick were non-participants, at least again per the estimated injury report. Josh Jacobs and Josh Myers would have been limited. Elton Jenkins, Kenny Clark, and Rashid Walker would have been full participants. And Xavier McKinney did not practice, but it was a personal issue and did not have anything to do with his health, which is good news on that side of things. Hopefully everything's going okay with Xavier McKinney. On the Dolphin side of things, Teron Armstead, Tyus Bowser, Kendall Fuller, and Anthony Walker Jr. all did not practice, or again, wouldn't have practiced. Calais Campbell, Alec Ingold, Benito Jones, Jordan Poyer, Jalen Ramsey, and Isaiah Wynn were all limited. Julian Hill, Javon Holland, and Robert Jones were full participants. Patrick McMorris was no longer listed on the injury report. And Tyreek Hill also was a personal absence from practice. So both teams had one of those, McKinney and Hill, two big-time players. Sounds like both are going to be good to go for Thursday, however. Now let's get to Paul Bredel. We're joined now by Paul Bredel. Of course, you can find him on ESPN Lacrosse. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Paul, we've got a lot to discuss today. It's great joining you once again to talk about Packers 49ers, Packers Dolphins, maybe a little bit Thanksgiving food. We'll get into all of it, but how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. Always happy to be here with you. Quick turnaround, and then the ultra rare, what is this, back-to-back Thursday games upcoming for Green Bay?
It's a bizarro schedule because you've got obviously short week Thursday this week and then another Thursday next week. You've got four consecutive primetime games that I think could become potentially five consecutive if that Vikings game gets flexed. So you buckle in. It's going to be a lot of long nights. It's going to be a lot of grinding, and I could not be more excited for it. And of course, we'll jump into everything right away with you, Paul, and excited to do so. Well, let's start with kind of your key takeaways from this game. We did see a 49ers team that was, yes, a shell of itself, just a skeleton crew, if you will, but the Packers took care of business. What were kind of your key takeaways from this one?
I think the big one for me is, again, like you mentioned, the injuries that the 49ers were dealing with, but the Packers did what they were supposed to do, right? Like, we can look back at this game and say, well, they didn't have Bosa, obviously didn't have Purdy. And of course, huge impact on that game from the 49ers perspective. But the Packers can't handle or control who's on their schedule. They can't control who's lined up across from them. But what they can do is, you know, control what they can control, right? And going out and executing their game plan. And for the most part, they played a pretty complete game. I mean, they held the 49ers to 10 points in this game. I know the Niners had a couple drives there late in the first half, started the second half, but for the most part, the defense did what it was supposed to do. The offense did what it was supposed to do, put up 38 points, really good in the red zone, really good on third downs against this 49ers defense. And the special teams was sound as well. So it was a pretty complete game for the Packers. And when you're the superior opponent in this instance, again, and going up against a team that's, you know, had their ups and downs, that's dealing with injuries this season, you got to take care of business. And the Packers did that for the most part. So again, there's, I think, you know, a lot of people are obviously going to, and rightfully so, acknowledge who the 49ers are missing. And that's absolutely a factor. But from the Packers' perspective, they did what they were supposed to do, right? Like they won 38-10, which obviously has a very different feel than if they go out and win this game 20-17. So
My
big thing from this, Packers did what they were supposed to do in this game.
It's funny. I know Nagler said the exact words. I said the exact words. You just said the exact same words, taking care of business. Like that's all you can do in this game. Like there's, there's no other trophy or award that you can get in this one. If again, anything else happens besides taking care of business, it looks atrocious. So that's all you can do is go out there. And I think sometimes what I always like to do is get a feel for how the other team felt like the game went. Cause I know in San Francisco, despite them, you know, having Brandon Allen and everything like that, they're all upset that only 10 points scored in this game and that they couldn't get anything going on offense and that the defense looked so bad. And then they allowed 38 points. And like, when you frustrated a team and a fan base to that extent, man, you did your job. Like, And I get like the 49ers and their fans were expecting more than 10 points. They were expecting not to give up 38. They were, regardless of the injuries, this was not the result that they had in mind for this game. And you can like, if we were on the flip side of this, right? Mm-hmm. And if Jordan were out, if Zach Tom were out, if Rashawn Gary were out, if like same apples to apples, you know, comparison, right? If all those were out, we would be going into this game being like, yeah, this is going to be a tough game to win, regardless of who the opponent was. But you'd feel like, all right, they got Malik Willis. They've got good depth at defensive ends. They've got so-and-so. Like, we'd be talking ourselves into, hey, maybe this is going to be a tough one, but like, I think we can keep it competitive and so on and so forth. And if all of a sudden some team beat Green Bay 38-10 and it was never close and Green Bay couldn't get anything going and the other team went 5-for-5 in the red zone and like any of those numbers that you want to point out, we'd be like, man, the Packers sucked in this game and the other team just came in and blew us out of the water, even if it were in those circumstances. So to me, I look at it almost from the opposite of like, if you're San Francisco, you're frustrated with this performance. And that just shows me even more that Green Bay did exactly what they were supposed to do in this game.
Yeah. And from just the team perspectives, obviously it's a number of individual performances as well to be excited about in this game. I mean, Matt LaFleur said afterwards that he was, again, very pleased with what he saw from Jordan Love, who continues to trend in the right direction coming out of the bye week, being healthier. Josh Jacobs, I know we'll talk about him in a bit here too, but feels like the Packers found what can be their blueprint in terms of their offensive success late in the season. And then you had individual performance on defense, one collectively, I should say, just limiting Christian McCaffrey. I mean, that in itself, regardless of who is under center, who's at tackle for them. I mean, that's a challenge, as we all know. Quay Walker, Lucas Van Ness, Keyshawn Nixon, players like that we saw very encouraging performances from. So again, a lot of positives to take away from this, even if we do note again who the Niners were without in this game.
Yeah, I want to talk about one of those key performances. I know you wrote about Xavier McKinney, and I think two of the really important plays in this game when it was not, I don't think, in the balance, but frustrating. I mean, maybe just like the little anxious moments in the second half when you're only up by 10 points and the 49ers have the ball and the opportunity to cut it to a one score game. Maybe annoying is the best way to put it. Just like they're just kind of pesky and annoying at that point. Had they scored even a field goal, it's a one possession game. And instead, Xavier McKinney did the whole Dikembe Mutombo and said, no, no, no. What was your impressions of those two key plays in this game?
Yeah, I did want to write about that because, again, we can look at the final score 38-10, and I think that those two possessions in the start of the second half for the 49ers can be maybe forgotten about to a degree. And, again, obviously the interception's huge. We're going to remember that part of it. But, again, Packers gave up a touchdown before halftime at 17-7. The 49ers are driving. Like they're in the, I think they're at the Packers 39-yard line on that 4th-and-2 play. and they had Christian McCaffrey lined up in the slot. They had, I think it was Juwan Jennings just to his left, and they ran crossing, you know, Jennings from the left ran in breaker, McCaffrey from the slot ran the out. And the second McCaffrey put his foot in the ground, I mean, McKinney just made a break on that, undercut the route and forced the pass breakup. But again, the Niners were at the 39 yard line. They pick up that first down. They're on the cusp of field goal range. Again, even if they don't find the end zone, it's a one possession game. Packers offense goes three and out. 49ers get it back again. They're driving. They're in the Packers part of the field, I think around the 45 yard line or so. And it's third and eight. And again, McKinney, as he just seemingly always is, in the right place at the right time to come away with the interception, went through Debo's hands. I think McDuffie got his hand on it as well. And I also want to say as well, a key element to get to that third and eight, TJ Slayton. He was in on both Christian McCaffrey tackles on first down and second down that put it in third and eight, that forced the 49ers to have to be in that predictable passing situation to throw the ball. And then we all know McKinney returned at 48 yards. Packers started their 26. Three plays later, touchdowns, 24-7. Just a completely different dynamic of the game at that point moving forward. So again, even if both those drives for the 49ers end in field goals, it's what is it at that point? 13-17, completely different looking game at that point. So ended in a blowout, but McKinney, those early third quarter possessions, massive impact, massive trickle down effect to the rest of the game.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think one of the things I always talk about when evaluating safeties come draft time is the range of skills that different safeties have. And, you know, you kind of find some of these cover two safeties where you've got two high safeties and they're both playing half the field and that's kind of their main skill set. Like, you can find a lot of guys that can do that sort of stuff, but there is so many other things that safeties can potentially bring to the table that are so valuable. The ability to play a true center field role and get sideline to sideline and make, you know, an unbelievable amount of plays on the ball, like we've seen Xavier McKinney do. To me, that's one of the top things that you can do. If you can be a true single high safety and cover both sides of the field and range over and get a bunch of interceptions, like, there's so much value in that. But then coverage is the next thing that's on that list as well. And when you're a safety, if you can drop into the slot and cover a tight end, cover a running back like Christian McCaffrey, who's basically a wide receiver, or even some wide receivers in certain situations, especially if you're going to bring a blitz or something like that, and you're called upon to do that, whether it's blitzing off the edge, whether it is playing some too high safety and playing near half the field, whether it's playing in the box and being able to stop the run, like, you can take every single one of those boxes and check them off for Xavier McKinney, one after the other after the other. You need a single high safety, he's one of the best in the business. You need a guy who can cover Christian McCaffrey in the slot on a key moment, he's got that down too. We've seen him blitz and get a sack on the season. We've seen him force or recover fumbles. We've seen him do just a bit of everything, play in the box. Like, there's literally nothing that he can't do in that safety spot. It is still insane to me that the Giants would let that out of the building, because they are so, it's rare to find just the single high safety piece. So, like, if he was just that, he can do any of the other stuff. It is so hard to find just that piece of it. Add on everything else on top of it, not to mention an unbelievable locker room dude, unbelievable character dude. Like, it is just, it's stupid that they were able to get that guy, and it has paid such huge dividends so far.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that versatility from Halfley's perspective, so much flexibility in terms of putting together the game plan. And quarterbacks, I mean, they aren't looking to throw in McKinney's direction. So for the defensive perspective, in terms of the other cornerbacks on the field, the linebackers, that shrinks the field, right? Because there's a part of the field that offenses aren't even looking at anymore. And then just the disguise, the coverage disguise ability. I mean, go back and pick out any game. You'll see McKinney, you know, lined up at near the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden the ball snapped and he's in a completely different part of the field by the time the quarterback hits the top of his drop. So just so much versatility in that trickle down effect, how Halfley puts together a game plan, how that benefits the rest of the defenders on the field. And there was this great story that Ryan Downard, the defensive backs coach, shared. The Packers, when they were leaving the Jacksonville game, so they get the last second win, they're on their buses to go to the airport, and McKinney and Downard were on separate buses, and McKinney's already texting Downard asking him for the Jared Goff tape because the Lions were up next for the Packers. And that's just the level, that's just a slight peek behind the curtain of the level of preparation and just intensity, I guess is the word that I'll use, work ethic, obviously, that McKinney has that goes into the week that leads into what we see on Sundays. And Halfley gave an example of, McKinney's texting him Tuesday nights for like what's the third down package for this week's game. So when they go in on Wednesday after the off day and they begin their preparation for the upcoming opponent, McKinney's already looked it over. He's already met with Halfley. He's already met with Downard to discuss it, because when they go through walkthroughs later that day, when they go through practice later that day, yeah, it's the first time that they're working on it in that specific week. But Halfley goes, McKinney has to get it right. Instantly, he has to. And if he doesn't, even in a walkthrough setting, he is mad. He is mad at himself. And Halfley goes, that's what the great ones do. That's how they act. That's how they are with their preparation. And so I love those two stories, because again, it's just a little peek behind the curtain into who McKinney is and just what goes into everything leading up to everything that we're seeing on Sundays now with the splash plays, the interceptions, all of that impact.
We finally made it. It's Thanksgiving week, and that means even more football to digest all throughout this wonderful week. Miami's coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Thursday Night Football. And let's just say it, Jordan Love is owed a turkey leg this year. But that's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, when you sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. Now, this week, I am going with Tyreek Hill against Green Bay. Yes, you heard me right. I'm going with Tyreek Hill against Green Bay. I'm also going with Tucker Kraft against Miami's defense. Then on Sunday, I'm going with James Cook against San Francisco on Sunday Night Football. And I expect both Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson to put on a show in the Sunday afternoon slot. The best part is there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game.
The best players that I have seen for Green Bay in my time just kind of covering the team are the ones that are super intentional about their practice habits. David Bakhtiari, when he was in his prime, just like how he practiced every single day and was so focused on it. Davante Adams was the 1A example of it as well, how he went through every single practice with intentionality and purpose behind it. Xavier McKinney has that. Jaire Alexander has that. Like, just the best of the best practice that way, day in and day out. And I like, to the point where every single time in training camp, I would always say, like, just stop watching everything you're watching. Just watch David Bakhtiari or just watch Davante Adams for practice, because it's worth it just to see the work ethic and the habits that they develop. And the other cool story from McKinney too that I remember from camp was, I remember, so the coaching staff would be getting ready, or like the young safeties would be ready to meet with their position coaches to go over film from like the, I think it was the preseason game, if I remember correctly. So they're going in and they're getting ready to meet with their coaches to see what went well and what went wrong on film. And Xavier McKinney was meeting with the young safeties to prep them and go over the film before they could get in with the coaching staff, so that they knew what to expect in that film room session, already knowing the things that they did well and that they didn't know well, so that they'd be prepared to go in and have those discussions with their coaching staff and that they would be prepared for it. And it's like, the fact that he's not only doing it on his end, but that he's helping out guys like Javon Bullard and Evan Williams and Kitano Ladapo to make sure that they know what they're seeing and what they're going to be conversing with the safety coach, which is like, he's almost doing the safety coach's job before he, like, the safety coach can even, it's like, it's unbelievable the amount of preparedness and just focus and intensity that he has. And again, that he was available is just incredible.
Yeah. Not just home run, but you know, a 10 run grand slam in free agency for Goody when you pair McKinney and Josh Jacobs.
I kind of want to transition too to Jacobs, because obviously he had such an incredible performance in this one too. And it's just, they're sort of, it's not quite the Smiths, because it doesn't have that same marketability of like the Smiths, because they're the Smiths are the same position. But when Green Bay went out and got obviously Smith and Amos and the other Smith and that whole free agency group, they were kind of locked together. Now we kind of have Jacobs and McKinney, because they were signed in the same free agent class, sort of locked together as well, and seeing both of them just dominate on both sides of the ball has been so fun to watch. But before we even get into Jacob's performance in this one, one of the things that I hypothesized coming into this season was, I thought getting two guys like McKinney and Jacobs, who who have had really no opportunity to win in the NFL, no opportunity to make a playoff push, no opportunity to, you know, maybe be a Super Bowl team. They've never had that experience in their two careers in New York and LA slash Vegas slash whatever in Oakland. I don't even know in the entire time that Jacobs has been there. So, you know, those two guys get in this opportunity to win and be a part of a team that is actually for something. I think both of them are even extra motivated by the fact that they have this ability to go out and be part of a successful team. I don't know if you've seen anything different in the locker room, if they've said anything like that, but I definitely think it feels like they are extra excited about this opportunity in Green Bay.
Yeah, I mean, Jacobs talked about it after the game, just being grateful to be a part of the Packers organization. And I thought back to, I think it was OTAs when he had this conversation with us. You know, we know the resume Josh Jacobs has, All-Pro rushing leader in 2022, but he was talking about when he's looking at other running backs or just other position groups in as a whole, in terms of who's the best of the best. A big factor for Jacobs, again, as he's looking at others, is how do they perform when their team needs them? How do they perform in a high profile game? And again, for the resume that Jacobs has built for himself, he didn't necessarily have that opportunity to showcase that ability because the Raiders just weren't winning games. I think he had one playoff game during his first five seasons with the Raiders. Yeah. So for him, in his personal motivation, obviously what he wants for the team, in showcasing that, yes, I can be that guy on a really good football team that you can lean on in these must-have it situations, in these key games, and go out there and help you win. He felt personally for himself that was a part of kind of what his resume up to this point in his career was missing. So being able to come to Green Bay, obviously the talent that's here, the opportunity to win games, that was a big, big motivator for him, because now he truly feels like, all right, you've seen the numbers I can put up, but now I'm going to do it when the playoffs are here, or when, hey, we got to go out and win this game, or it's the fourth quarter, they need me to go get this win, they're going to give me the ball over and over and over again. So Jacobs talked about that over the summer as just being a big motivator for him as he continues to try to put himself, you know, or further establish himself in that top tier of running backs in the game this season. So coming here, having that opportunity, a big, big motivator for him.
Just kind of a follow up on that, just kind of a free agent philosophy thing. There was the philosophy for a while of like, don't pay running backs, like don't draft running backs high, like don't go and get these guys. And, you know, the NFL always being cyclical, right? It was a passing league and like you could find running backs anywhere to some extent. And I still sort of to some extent believe that, but it's definitely making me question a lot this year when you see teams like the Houston Texans go out and get a Joe Mixon and he's absolutely, you know, tearing it up in Houston. Obviously, Saquon Barkley in Philly has been one of the biggest free agent acquisitions of any team. Again, thank you to the New York Giants for that. Josh Jacobs in Green Bay, like we are Derrick Henry in Baltimore. Like we are seeing some of the top teams right now have dynamic, super important running backs as a part of their team. And to me, it has been more than worth the investment that Green Bay has put in. When they first signed it, I'm like, you know, I'm still kind of like in this. All right, you're going to spend a big free agent contract on Josh. You've got dead cap already with Aaron Jones. You're spending a third round pick on Marshawn Lloyd. It's a lot of money at a position where usually you can kind of find some guys, but man, I'm certainly not questioning it anymore. It certainly seems like it's paying massive dividends right now.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, the cyclical component of the NFL, I mean, they're you spread them out. And so what do defenses start doing? They start seeing a cover, offenses start seeing a ton of cover too. Well, what's one of the best ways to counter cover too? You run the ball at those formations. And then of course, while Jacobs is known for what he does as a ball carrier, you know, there's, when you have a running back who can do a variety of things like him, that's just so many other dimensions that can be opened up within your offense, the outside zone, the inside zone, the ability to impact the passing game. So again, there's always going to be that, where do you draw the line? But with someone like Jacobs from the Packers perspective, I think just all the different elements he adds to the offense, in addition to just being a ball carrier and someone that you can throw a heavy workload on, give them 26 carries like they did on Sunday and say, go help us win this game, take control of it for us. Again, I think that just adds, especially with Matt LaFleur as the play caller and his ability to just really maximize the versatility and variety of skill sets that Jacobs has, or just any of the players within this offense has. And we're really just, and we're seeing that help just elevate the offense as a whole through oftentimes starting with the running back position.
interesting in this one that this is the game that he does get 26 carries. Now, obviously, they needed him. And to some extent, they needed him. I was looking back at it. It was a two-score game when Josh Jacobs got his last carry. His last carry was the touchdown where they went up three scores. And like up until that point, it was still a two-possession game. It's still a two-score game. They kind of kept him in. I think he obviously got the 100 yards, got that final touchdown, and then gave him a 21-point lead at that time. And then we didn't see Jacobs for the remainder of the game. But you do have this Thursday night game coming up. You do have a running back in Josh Jacobs that's coming off of 26 carries, a pretty significant workload against a tough 49ers team to run against, the first 100-yard rusher they've allowed in 55 games. So what is your expectations for Jacobs in this game? I know this dude is a tank and he is physical and strong and like it doesn't seem like he ever wears down, but this is a pretty quick turnaround for coming off of 26 carries against a tough 49ers defense.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And Jacob said right after the game that he was going to spend about another 90 minutes, I think is what he said, doing his recovery immediately after the win to get himself to at 100% or as close as he could for Thursday's game in case the Packers need him in that capacity. But just my gut feeling is that it's going to be somewhat reduced. And again, after a 26-carry game, reduced is a bit of a, can't think of the word I'm looking for here, but I think he's going to maybe be in more in that 15 to 20 range, right? I think we're going to see more of Emmanuel Wilson, more of Chris Brooks, because I think one, just the Packers philosophy, I think they're always mindful of the running back's workload. And again, yes, could they send Jacobs out there for that? Sure. But they understand that, hey, there's still, I think, five games left after this one. We're going to need him for the long haul as well. So I think just how the Packers approach that's going to be a part of the equation. And again, Matt LaFleur said afterwards, we have the utmost confidence in Wilson and Brooks if we need to lean on them a little bit heavier. And this isn't to say that Jake, obviously he's going to be the, you know, a focal point at running back, but instead of 25 carries, maybe it's more like he's in the 15-ish range for this game. But Emmanuel Wilson has done, I mean, it feels like even in the limited opportunities, every time he touches the ball, he generates a chunk run. And I asked Ben Sermons about that last week, and he noted two aspects that contributes to it. One, his acceleration and his ability to just start and stop on a dime is what allows him for that change of direction, that acceleration, because not a ton of opportunities for him, maybe five-ish carries a game, I think is what he's averaging this season, but there always seems to be a 8, 10, 12-yard run mixed in there. And again, it goes back to that aspect of it. And then you got Chris Brooks filling that do-it-all role. And Sermon said different skill sets, different players, but in terms of what they're asking Brooks to do, he equated it to Patrick Taylor, you know, filling the variety of roles within the offense. And I looked it up this morning for an article I wrote, and Chris Brooks ranks second in PFF's grades among pass blockers at the running back position. So again, not to be all end all by any means, but I think that does align with our eye test and what we're seeing from him this season. So Packers have the players behind Jacobs, I think, to if they want to lessen his workload in this game, be mindful of it. And again, Matt LaFleur said they have the confidence in it, but I just tend to have this gut feeling that, yeah, this isn't going to be a 20, 25 carry game for Jacobs. Maybe it's more in that 15 range, and we see a little bit more Wilson and Brooks shouldering some of that workload.
Yeah, running back by committee, I think, is probably, and I like these two backs too. I think Wilson and Brooks are ready for it. And what Brooks has brought in that pony package of being able to be a lead blocker for Jacobs at times, almost being like a fullback. And then in pass protection, he can catch the ball to the backfield well. Like there's a lot there to like about Chris Brooks. And yeah, we've seen Emmanuel Wilson really grow in this offense. The interesting thing I was looking at with Jacobs is, so he obviously had the 26 carries in this game, right? The most snaps that he played in this season, he played 49 snaps against Philly, 47 against Indy, 46 against Arizona and Minnesota, 45 against Jacksonville, 44 against LA. He only played 37 snaps in this game against San Francisco, which was his third fewest of the season. So it's interesting in the fact that, yes, he had a lot of wear and tear from getting 26 carries in this game, but there were only 11 other snaps that he actually played in this game, and which he didn't get the ball. It's sort of this interesting dynamic of like they used him, but they actually did sort of take care of him in regards to a snap count, and where, you know, this is a 70 some snap game for Green Bay. He was only in there for 37 of them. Just so happened he got the ball in 26. So he got used a lot, but it wasn't also a ton from a snap standpoint. So maybe that'll allow him to recover a little bit quicker. And just the fact that he didn't have to be out there for 50, 60 snaps in this one, that maybe can help that recovery just a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great observation. And I think at the end of the day, again, they're always going to be mindful, but the game flow, how things are unfolding is going to be a factor as well, whether they maybe lean in a little more heavy or turn it down.
Going to the defensive side of the ball for a moment, three players I thought that have sort of been, I don't know, much maligned or talked about, chatted about, maybe not always with the, you know, the nicest of comments towards from time to time, Quay Walker, LVN, and Keyshawn Nixon. I thought all had pretty impressive performances in this game. I know PFF had Quay Walker as their highest graded defender. I had Quay Walker as my highest graded defender. Keyshawn Nixon was my second highest. LVN had that huge forced fumble. Keyshawn Nixon had the forced fumble. You know, Quay, you know, did have the dropped interception, but I thought outside of that played really, really well in this game. Like, if nothing else, really nice to see some positive games from those three. And if maybe it's more than that, maybe just a step in the right direction and seeing what these guys can do. I just think if nothing else for their confidence and hopefully for them moving forward, this is just a stepping stone in the right direction, but kind of nice to see these three guys step up and have big games against San Fran.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Quay Walker did an excellent job in the run game. Obviously, their 49ers were trying to stretch McCaffrey to the boundary on several of those snaps, and he did a really good job in a few instances of not letting McCaffrey turn upfield, fighting through blockers, getting through gaps to be in on some of those tackles. And then Lucas Van Ness, Rashawn Gary after the game had mentioned that when they were on the sidelines a few series before that fumble, Van Ness had made a comment about how the 49ers, what they did blocking wise, what the quarterback did on play action, and added, all right, if we see this again, here's how we should attack it. So a few series later, he got exactly what Van Ness had been telling the defensive front about, all right, here's what we should do in this situation. And then he took advantage of it and went and made the play. So that again, those little peeks behind the curtain, I think are important to providing context to it, because again, for a young player, it wasn't just going out and making the play, which obviously is the most important part of it, but it's in the moment, diagnosing, recognizing what's unfolding in front of you, understanding, analyzing how to make adjustments on the fly, and then going out there and doing it. So I think for Van Ness, just that little insight that Gary provided, I think adds for me even more encouragement to his play on the field, to making that fumble, because again, in real time, you're seeing adjustments being made and counters, and then going out there and executing on it. And that's incredibly encouraging.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, there's still, you go out and watch LVN, and if I'm an offensive lineman, I'm like, I know that he hasn't had the success yet, but like, you still look at that dude and you're like, man, that does not seem like a fun guy to have to block. And it's just putting the technique together. It's just putting together that pass rush plan. And man, if he could just get there a little bit more, there were a few times in this game where he collapsed the pocket better, used a long arm, used a little bit of a bull rush, and just kind of used that raw natural strength. If we can see a little bit more of that, I think it's really going to pay dividends. And there were even just signs from Rashawn Gary. There were signs from Kenny Clark. Kenny Clark had a rush in this game. I think it was against Puni. At guard, where it looks like prime Kenny Clark, where he immediately uses his hands to get the defender or the offensive lineman off of him, and then makes a quick step up field, and he just beat the guard like with ease, and he's immediately at the quarterback. Now the quarterback got rid of the ball right away, but in most cases that's either a sack or a big time play for Green Bay. Just unlucky that the quarterback got rid of the ball so quick on that one. But there were signs. Carl Brooks had a couple of really nice plays, and to me, nowhere near there. Even Devontae Wyatt had a really nice pressure on a play. So there's just some more signs from this defensive line that maybe they're piecing it together. I think it's one of the most important aspects of the remainder of this season is to see more of that. But I think with LVN, Gary, Wyatt, Brooks, Clark, I thought we at least saw a few more signs in this one.
Yeah, and obviously we know Packers need to win games now, but Gutekunst talked about this during the bye week. We saw it last year. So much of your NFL season is about peaking at the right time. Yeah. When are you playing your best football? And that's how a 7-seed, 9-8 Packers team goes on a run last year, because they were operating, despite what their record was, as one of the best teams in football. And to your point, especially in these coming weeks, and Gary's production over the last month has been picking up steam as well, we're starting to see this front particular gain some traction, build some momentum. And that's what you want to see, particularly in November and December, because come January, and again, it's not to take away from their performances that were, or say that, or not say that, hey, they shouldn't be better than what they have been up to this point. Not saying that. But at the end of the day, it's about when are you playing your best football. And right now, among several of those players that you mentioned in the unit as a whole, we're seeing steps in the right direction as we really start to get into this final stretch and crunch time in the season.
Yeah, and hopefully that continues. And again, one game at a time, as Matt LaFleur always likes to say, every game's a little bit different, but hopefully a step in the right direction for a lot of those guys. And then we'll see. They're about to get tested in a significant way against this Miami offense this upcoming week. Speaking of which, as we start looking ahead to Packers Dolphins, we got the simulated injury report on Monday. Paul and I are recording this on Tuesday morning, so we have not had the ability to see the Tuesday injury report as of yet or get a practice report from Tuesday. But your thoughts on the initial simulated injury report?
Yeah, I think the big one for me is Isaiah McDuffie. And I think that's just because the linebacker depth is already thin. Edgerrin Cooper didn't practice didn't have a simulated practice on Monday. And yep. I guess just from my very untrained and unknowledgeable medical perspective, overcoming a hamstring injury in a week feels like a quick turnaround to me. Right. So I guess my expectation right now is that they're not going to have Cooper. So if you're already down Cooper, we'll have to see what McDuffie's status turns out to be. But then again, Wilson's going to step up into a much larger role when, again, he's shown some playmaking. But the trickle down from there is now Tyron Hopper, who has played maybe 5-10 snaps defensively this season. Yeah. He's now your third linebacker when you're in your base defense. And again, going against a very fast, very high-powered Miami offense. So for me, that's the big one that I'm watching. Obviously, Jair's on there as a non-participant. But again, I think it's what your expectation level is. I wasn't planning on Jair being out there for them on Thursday. And if he is, be happily surprised. But so for me right now, Isaiah McDuffie is the big one.
Not only the super fast Miami offense, but a Miami offense that will use every piece of eye candy that they can possibly give you in motions and fake motions and orbits and end arounds and reverses and fake handoffs and bootlegs and anything that you can possibly imagine under the sun to give a linebacker just fits and make their head spin. So having a rookie linebacker who's played one non-garbage time snap and about 5 or 6 garbage time snaps in his entire career, all of which were this past week. Yeah, that's a lot to ask of him on a short week. I would expect we would see a ton of Quay and Eric Wilson as your primary linebackers and nickel. And I would assume that if that were the scenario where McDuffie were out, I'd assume we'd get Jamin Davis called up from the practice squad just to provide a little bit of depth there. But you're one injury away to Quay or Wilson to all of a sudden Tyron Hopper or Jamin Davis, I guess. One of them is playing on every single play, basically. So your depth takes a significant hit. And I'll just say this, too. I know that he is kind of like in that number 3-4 linebacker range, and like his amount of snaps that he gets week to week can kind of vary. McDuffie's been good for them this year. Like he's never going to be a Pro Bowler. He's never going to be somebody that changes the game in a significant way, but he is a solid to good replacement level player. At any time that they need him out on the field, he gives good effort. He's a good tackler. He diagnoses well. He's never in the wrong spot. You never really see him miss tackles. Like he's just a good, solid player, and you lose a player like that, and it definitely hurts your depth at the position.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up McDuffie and his play this season. Just a reliable player. And if he's your third, fourth guy that you have on your depth chart, you're doing really well at the linebacker position.
Yeah, totally agreed. Speaking of the injury report, just the one other one I wanted to kind of ask you about is the Romeo Doubs injury. I think going in from that expectation viewpoint, seeing the tough, you know, sort of fall and the head go back and everything like that, you know, I don't think we expected him obviously to play this week, and we'll see what the rest of the week brings. I'm not even sure I would really want him to play this week if I'm being honest, but regardless, that would open up some opportunity for some of these other wide receivers, primarily Malik Heath, who we saw step up at the end of this last game. Nice touchdown catch, nice catch on the right side of the field. And then, you know, obviously you've got Dontavian Wicks, who I think could use some more opportunity and hopefully make the most of it, and Bo Melton as well. But for me, just kind of going back here, Dontavian Wicks is the one where there's a unbelievably talented football player there. We have not seen that so far this year. It's been a bit of a struggle for him. This could be that opportunity that he gets to show, I'm still that dude and I can go out and have a massive game when you need me to. I think this is a huge game for Dontavian Wicks.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I wrote about this last week. Again, it kind of goes back to peaking at the right time. And if the Packers just continue to rely heavily on Jaden Reed, Watson, and Dobbs come the playoffs, again, ton of talent there. They have the run game. They have Love. Again, the offense is still going to be high-powered. But for it to be at its best, at its top level of play, Dontavian Wicks is absolutely a part of that equation. So not only is this a big game for him in terms of, all right, the Packers are probably going to be without Romeo Doubs, you need someone else to step up to fill that production that's now going to be missing, but from just a momentum standpoint, right? Going into these final games on the right foot, having a strong game, a strong performance is going to be really, really important to him being an important element of this Packers offense. Again, come those final weeks, come the playoff time, because even for all the individual talent that the Packers have, the strength and numbers component is still a big, big part of this offense. When you have that much talent, defenses can't focus in on one player, spreads them out, creates one-on-one matchups. Again, such a trickle-down effect when you can trot out four or even five receivers that could get the ball in any moment. So getting Wicks on track, building that momentum, I think is going to be really, really important to just the overall, not necessarily offensive success, because they can still have that without him, but what is the ceiling for this offense, yeah. I guess, is how I'll describe it. And even through all the drops, you know, he's still getting his share of targets up until these last few weeks. And it's because he creates separation. I know PFF has that metric where they measure, you know, how often a receiver's getting open. And I think going into last week's game, he was ranked second in the NFL in that category. Like, that's a dude when he's playing at a high level, you can put him on the, it doesn't matter what the situation is, first and 10, second and long, third and short, third and long, because he can win. He can win in any part of the field. He can win just about any one-on-one matchup. And that's a guy in those critical situations you can get the ball to. So getting him on track, building that momentum, really important just for, again, the ceiling for this Packers offense.
One of the most underrated blocking players on the team as well. I love watching Dontayvion Wicks block, and that's always going to get you some more reps out on the field. So really like what he can bring in that standpoint. And this is going to be a big opportunity for him. And I think if he can make the most of it, hopefully that gets some of those opportunities the remainder of the year, and he can kind of just take off for the rest of the season. As we look at the rest of this Packers Dolphins matchup, what are you kind of looking for? What are you looking forward to? What are you going to kind of be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think the big thing, and we alluded to it, is just the speed of this Miami Dolphins offense. And one, the linebacker position. How does that unit handle, you know, Devin Achane coming out of the backfield? And again, all the eye candy misdirection motion that you mentioned, because I wrote about this coming into the 49ers game, kind of a similar ilk with McCaffrey and just how Shanahan operates his offense. But the Niners, the Dolphins, I mean, those offenses really stress the linebacker position. One, just all of the different looks they throw at them, but they stress them horizontally as well. So how does the Packers linebacker unit handle that? And then, of course, the cornerback position. You know, if they're, again, without Jair Alexander and you have to contend with a Tyreek Hill, a Jalen Waddle, they have Janu Smith at the tight end position. So Dolphins passing game in particular against the Packers linebackers and secondary, which we talked about in last week's show, kind of a bit of our unknowns right now with on this team. So how do they respond to that unit?
I'm really interested to see the game plan that Jeff Hafley has for this one defensively, especially if you are without an Isaiah McDuffie, without a Jair Alexander, just some of the mixing and matching. What corners do they use? Are they in a cloud coverage and making sure everything stays in front of them with those dynamic wide receivers? But you don't want to give easy completions either, because these guys can take the run after the catch. You're going to have to be a really good tackling team. The linebackers are going to have great discipline. Of course, you would love if the defensive front could get after the quarterback and two on this one, but it's a tough matchup defensively against that high-powered Dolphins offensive attack, and hopefully they can figure something out. But I think this is where Jeff Hafley earns his money in this one. If he can come up with a good game plan against Mike McDaniel's offense, it'll go a long way, and I think setting Green Bay up for success. So to me, like, Green Bay's going to have their work cut out from offensively as well, and just trying to make sure that they're getting enough points against Miami's defense to just kind of keep this thing, if Miami's offense is going well, like to keep this back and forth or whatever. But I'm really interested to see Jeff Hafley's game plan in this one. Final thoughts or predictions for the game? Anything that you, any other hot takes you got on this one?
No hot takes for me, but I think one last thing I'll mention is just going back to the run game. You have Jordan Love, obviously all the receivers. We know Matt LaFleur likes to throw the ball. Passing game is always going to be a big part of this offense. We know that. And the game-to-game matchup, the game flow is going to dictate the run-pass mix that the Packers utilize. But I think Sunday's game, and we saw this last year too, you know, although the passing game took off during those final 5-6 games, Aaron Jones also had, I think, 100 yards in the final 5 games of the season as well. The blueprint for this Packers offense, I think, starts with their success on the ground. And I don't think that's groundbreaking information by any means, but it's not a coincidence that in Sunday's game, a heavy Josh Jacobs game where he was finding success, Emmanuel Wilson was as well, that they also were 5 for 5 in the red zone, that they were, I think, 50% on their third down conversions. Because if you can get things going on the run game, such a positive trickle-down effect to the rest of the offense, and Tucker Kraft said it best, when Jacobs is playing like that, when the run game's rolling, the entire playbook's open. There's, you know, the Packers can dial up anything in any situation. So, again, passing game, we obviously want to see it, I think, steady a little bit more than what it has been, and I do believe it is in the right direction. But the run game, I think, can be the foundation for this offense to just really help it hit its stride and just be the catalyst for reaching its ceiling.
There's always a little bit of like a cause and effect to this. Of course, mm-hmm. if you're winning a football game, you're going to run the ball more to try to run out the mm-hmm. clock. So like there's like, it's not just like, well, if they just ran the ball, you know, 30 times every game, they're going to win every time. Like it doesn't work that way, but they ran the ball 53 times against the Colts, 42 against San Francisco, 39 against Jacksonville, 38 against Arizona, 37 against Tennessee, 30 against the Rams, 25 against Chicago, 23 against Detroit and lost, 21 against Philly and lost, 20 against Houston, 19 against Minnesota and lost. You know, I think the one thing when I went out to look at this, it wasn't necessarily to see, all right, when did they win and lose based on rushing attempts? Because again, usually that you can tell that, right? But I think the bigger thing is like, this is a team, this is a Matt LaFleur offense. And I know part of this is, some of this is due to like Malik Willis and having to play him and things mm-hmm. like that. But like, this is a team that can run 53 times in a game against Indianapolis, 42 times against San Francisco, 39 against Jacksonville, 38 against Arizona. Like we are seeing this team really focus on running the football. And I mean, the rushing yards that they have, their lowest rushing total of the season was 82 yards against Houston. They still averaged 4.1 yards in that game. In fact, their worst rushing yards per attempt was actually this game, 4.0 against San Francisco in a game where they rushed 42 times for 169 yards. That's the first time that they've been held to, that's their worst rushing total. It's still 4.0 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. So like, this is a team that has been really impressively dedicated to the run, regardless of whether it's been Malik Willis or Jordan Love. They've pretty much stuck with it unless they've been down 28-0 or what, 24-3 to Detroit, where you're basically forced to throw in those situations. I've been really impressed with what they've done to establish the run week in and week out and really establish it as an identity of this mm-hmm. part of the team. And Paul, I'm sure you are aware of this, but in about a week, we turn that calendar to December, and it's going to feel, mm-hmm. I think, like a lot like December football on Thursday night on Thanksgiving, too. We're flipping that calendar into power run football season. There's not a better back, I don't know, that I'd want right now than maybe Josh Jacobs running that power run style. He's been phenomenal, and this offensive line has been dedicated to it. I've really liked that aspect of this team this year.
Yeah, and to just to put a bow on it, the run game just opens up everything. The passing game, it's just so much so advantageous for the offense when you're able to pick up 4 or 5 yards a pop.
Yeah, it really is. And it just, again, sets everything else up for mm-hmm. success. And to me, like you said it perfectly, it's the catalyst for this team. I think it will remain that way. And then you get that going, and then you get Jordan going, and everything's just going to hopefully click mm-hmm. together at the right time. And that's certainly what we're hoping for the remainder of the season. Paul, it's going to be a fun one. Thanksgiving night. Looking forward to seeing you in the press box. We'll cheers a turkey leg together mm-hmm. or something. But what do you got coming out this week for the rest of us to keep an eye out for?
I appreciate it, Andy. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Brettel. Right now over at ESPNLacrosse.com, talked about what we discussed here, Josh Jacobs, Emmanuel Wilson, Chris Brooks, just what that balance might look like. And again, the success that the Packers have had running the ball with Wilson, Chris Brooks as a pass blocker. And then we'll be previewing, obviously, the upcoming game with Miami, focusing initially here on that passing offense and what do the Packers do in the secondary and at linebacker.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting matchup. I'm looking forward to it a ton. Make sure to go find all of his work at Paul_Brettel. And of course, on ESPNLacrosse.com, you can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.